Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. We've all heard of this saying before. And when someone calls us a name that really hurts us to the core, we may repeat this phrase that we often learned in our childhood over and over in our head in a hope that maybe it's true. That maybe sticks and stones can break our bones, but names will never hurt us. And yet, we know that that's not really true. Because bones can heal. It only takes about 6 weeks for a bone to heal. But when people call us names, it cuts us to the core into a wound that's sometimes so deep it's difficult to heal. Because names have power. Names can and do hurt. And today we hear a story about names, about the names we call ourselves, about the names we call each other, and most importantly, about the names that God calls each one of us. It's a rather bizarre story, though, at first glance when we look at it. A story about a man named Jacob who wrestles with an angel all night long and then gets a new name. So in order to understand the power of this story, it's important to understand the power of a name. And in this case, the power in Jacob's name. It all started on the day that Jacob was born, the day that he got his name. Jacob was the son of Isaac and Rebekah. Yep, the same Isaac we heard about last week, the son of Abraham and Sarah, born in their old age, born out of laughter. And so they name him Isaac, which means laughter. Well, this Isaac grows up and marries Rebekah, and she becomes pregnant with twins. When the first child is born, it's a boy, and he is so red and hairy that they name him Esau, which means hairy. That's a nice name to give your kid. Then the second child is born. It's another boy. And this one is born with his hand grabbing his brother's foot, trying to yank him back in the womb so he can be the firstborn instead. And so this one they name Jacob. Jacob means the usurper or the supplanter or maybe more simply, the cheat. And Jacob lives up to that name he is given, Jacob the cheat. He was not the oldest son, the one who would get all of the inheritance and blessings from his father, but he was a cheat. And so he managed to cheat his brother out of his brother's birthright and his brother's blessing. We find out that he gets his brother's birthright by taking advantage of a rather difficult situation his brother Esau finds himself in. Esau finds himself starving and so hungry that he doesn't know if he can go on. And his brother Jacob comes to him and says, "Oh, I'll give you some food if you sell me your birthright." Now that's a way to kick someone when he's down, isn't it? Well, food is a basic need, and so Esau agrees to this rather unequal exchange. And in doing so, Jacob effectively cheats Esau out of his birthright. And then, to make matters worse, when their father Isaac was getting older to the end of his days, Isaac calls his son Esau and says, "Esau, go out into the field, go hunt, make me a wonderful savory meal, and then I will give you my blessing." Well, while Esau is out hunting, Jacob and his mother Rebekah come up with a little bit of a scheme. Instead, they kill a lamb that's right there nearby and turn it into some stew for Isaac. And then they take the lamb's wool and they put it on Jacob's hands and on his neck so he becomes hairy like his brother Esau. Isaac takes in the food to his, pardon me, Jacob takes in the food to his father Isaac, and Isaac, whose eyesight is going, decides that yes, indeed, this is his son Esau. It feels like Esau, smells like Esau, and so he gives the blessing to this son who he thinks is Esau, but actually is his son Jacob, who has now a second time cheated his brother Esau. Jacob is a scoundrel and a cheat to the very core, living up to every aspect of his name. And when Esau finds out that this has happened yet again, that his brother has stolen what is his, he is filled with rage. And so Esau comes after his brother, and Jacob, being at least a little bit smart, decides he better get out of Dodge if he wants to save his life. And so he goes on the run to go live with his mother's brother Laban. Now, the interesting thing is that Laban's rather a cheat as well, and so Jacob the cheater gets cheated even more by his uncle, but that's another story. But in the end, Jacob ends up working 14 years for his uncle Laban in order to marry both of Laban's daughters, and then work 6 more years in order to get some flocks, and ends up tricking Laban out of most of his flocks as well. But the problem is, when you're a cheat, it catches up with you. And so now Laban is enraged that he has been cheated by Jacob, and so Jacob is on the run again. Well, there's not many more places to run to, and so Jacob decides that he should go back home again. But if he goes back home again, taking his wives and his children, his brother Esau's still there. So Jacob decides to try and play it smart this time. And he sends ahead numerous trains and gifts coming to Esau, trying to appease his brother Esau. So maybe after these 20 years, Esau will forgive him all of the things that he has done and will be appeased by the many flocks and goods that Jacob is offering to his brother as a peace offering. Jacob sends out these gifts, and then he waits to find out his brother's reaction. He waits alone by the river in the dark of night, wondering what will happen. And while he's there waiting, he suddenly finds himself attacked. And he begins to wrestle with his attacker, with his opponent. He wrestles with this opponent all night long and quickly begins to realize that this is no ordinary person. And Jacob keeps wrestling with this opponent and does not let go. Finally, as the day begins to break, the opponent cries out, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." And Jacob replies, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And the opponent replies, "What is your name?" It's a simple question. But for Jacob, it's a loaded question. Because names have power. Names say who we are. And so, when his opponent asked Jacob to say his name, it's a confession. A confession. "I am Jacob, the usurper, the supplanter, the trickster, the cheat. That is who I am at my very core and being. I'm Jacob." Deep down, in revealing his name, he reveals who he truly is. And those who have watched the story unfold are ready to cheer. Finally, the cheat is going to get what he deserves. And then the opponent, who we find out is the Lord, replies, not with punishment as we expect, but instead responds, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." The Lord does not dole out the punishment that Jacob so deserves, but instead blesses him and gives him a new name, Israel, the one who has striven with God. That's what his name means. And from this moment on, Jacob begins to live into his new name. He is reconciled to his brother Esau. He has 12 sons, and from these 12 sons, a nation emerges. God transforms Jacob, the trickster and cheat, into Israel, the founder of God's nation. This is how our God works, not only with Jacob, but with each one of us. Because in the waters of baptism, we are given a new name as well. We are renamed children of God. Now, sometimes you may have heard baptism referred to as a christening. It's not a name that we often use within the Lutheran tradition, but it is a very common name for baptism. It's not a name that I usually prefer when talking about baptisms, because when you christen something, it's not only something that's related to baptism. Sometimes we christen things like ships and other inanimate objects. And so christening sometimes has some other meanings. But when we really look at this word christening, it's actually a wonderful word to describe what often happens in baptism. Because in baptism, we are christened. We are called by the name of Christ. We are called to be like Christ. In baptism, we are christened and become Christ-like. We become God's beloved children, just as Jesus is God's beloved Son. And so in baptism, God says to each one of us, "You are Christ to me. You are my child forever." It's hard to believe, though, because so often we're called by so many other names every day. Some names positive and affirming names, and many other names not so much. Who are you really? What do others call you? Or more importantly, what names do you call yourself? What are the names that you don't dare speak aloud because fear and shame bind you? Names that are at the very core and depth of your being that only rise up in the dark of night and wrestle with us. Names such as scoundrel and cheat or phony like Jacob. Or maybe disappointment or failure. Unworthy. Irresponsible. Unlovable. Unfaithful. Incapable. Burned out. Ugly? What is the name that haunts you in the dark of night and pursues you all day long? What is your name? What do you call yourself? We speak those names and bring them to the light of day as Jacob spoke his name, and we do not hear words of condemnation, but instead we hear God's unrelenting response that, "No, You are Christ. You are Christ to me. You are the one I chose and redeemed at great cost. You are the one I am committed to forever. You are my beloved. You are my child. You are christened and renamed. You are Christ. We come here to this place, and we bring all the names that we have been given and accepted that do not give life, and we leave them here. We leave them at this font, and we depart this place as Christians. We come here week after week to hear our true name spoken to us. You are Christ. You are a Christian. You are renamed God's beloved child forever. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. You know it's not true. Names hurt. But in the waters of baptism, God renames you and gives you a new name. You are a beloved child forever. This is most certainly true. Amen.